He made a huge splash in his two seasons at IU and then decided to jump to the NBA. But now, more than a decade after retiring from professional basketball, he's resurfacing again. Last week, we heard the story of the former Mr. Basketball who helped lead his team to three state high school championships and then became a star in college almost immediately. He was the Big Ten Freshman of the Year and then earned All-American honors as a sophomore when dramatic game-winning shots almost became the norm. He entered the NBA draft after that season, but for a variety of reasons was never able to establish an NBA career. After bouncing around several professional leagues in the U.S. and abroad, he's now trying to generate a new career as a basketball instructor and coach. Let's pick up the story with the 1989 NBA draft as he's about to enter a new world. I'm Mark Monteith, and once again, I'm going one-on-one with Jay Edwards.
This is One-on-One with Mark Monteith on 1070 The Fan. Brought to you by Georgetown Market, Indy's family-owned natural food store since 1973. Movie Time Video Productions, they make your memories last forever.
So where were you on draft day? You're a second-round draft pick of the Clippers. The draft was televised then, of course. Where were you watching it?
I was at my house watching it.
In Marion?
I had my family around me, yes. It was a disappointing day. I thought I was going to get drafted a little higher than that. I was projected to go, you know, top 15. I ended up slipping to 33.
And why do you think you slipped?
Well, I had some problems at IU campus on a little 500 that didn't help. Incident with a young lady, and I was right maybe a week before camp. So, yeah.
I don't even remember that. It was.
I had an assault charge, which, you know, it sounds bad, but I was the one getting charged at, and it ended up getting dropped. Yeah,
you're more defending yourself?
Defending myself, yes. Okay.
So that dropped you, huh? So yeah. You're sitting at your house in Marion and hoping to go in the first round and just sitting there waiting and waiting, huh?
Yeah, it's very disappointing. I know I'm not the only player that's went through that.
No.
Yeah, when you slide out, you know, when they announced the last pick in the first round, you know, I don't think I turned the TV off. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then you just got a call from the Clippers.
No, I think somebody ran in the bedroom and told me that I got
okay. Did you care where you went? I mean, was there a particular team that you were hoping to go to at that point? That
well,
you
I mean, played? I was hoping at the later it got that I was going to be on a good team.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, you know, I ended up going to the Clippers. At that time, there was a lot of young players that were going out for themselves, and that didn't help at all either.
Yeah, they were not a good team or a good franchise at that point. That was not the good place to go to. Then you're in L.A. too. So
yes.
That first year, how many games did you play in?
Three, I think.
Yeah, four. I got four, you. I looked at you played four games and scored a total of 7 points. Yeah. Do you remember the shots you hit in the NBA?
Yeah, of course.
When there's,
it's only three of them.
Tell me about your NBA moments there.
I was playing on one leg then. I mean, that's before I had my surgery. So,
Right. Them
four games, and then after I finished them four games, I think I was in the layup line in my fifth game, and it tore some more. They put me back on IR.
Did you open the season on the injured list there?
Yeah, I opened the season up, and then we traded for Ron Harper. And he came into town, and then he tore his knee up. And then they took me off IR, put me on the court, and then I ended up getting hurt again.
But you weren't ready to come back.
I wasn't even close to ready. I couldn't even breathe on the court. I was out of shape and hurt.
This is really the story of your NBA career then.
You know, that's
you're playing injured, and you're screwed, basically.
This is every other time, what my faults off the court, my court kind of covered it up. Mm-hmm. With my actions on the court.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's the first time I couldn't show my actions on the court to cover up what was off the court. So everything came out to the open there.
And that year with the Clippers, is your off-court behavior good? Or are you still having
No. I'm on IR. I'm partying more than I ever have ever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
With money in my pocket at 19 in L.A. And, I mean, there's a lot of things a lot of traps out in L.A. for a 19-year-old kid to get into with a pocket full of money.
Meet any famous people out there?
Oh, yeah. I met Don Cornelius, Chachi, Scott Baio was my good friend out there.
So you would hang out with guys like that.
Bobby Brown,
You're living the life.
I wasn't doing the right things, though.
Yeah.
You know, I should have been doing what got me there, and that was
on in the court playing ball.
What not kind of salary are you pulling down as a second round draft pick?
I wasn't making money like they are now, but yeah. I think was it $275,000 a year?
That had to seem great though.
Oh yeah, back then in '99, yeah, it was pretty. Yeah, probably sending
some money home to mom, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 My guys at Bloomington and everything else, yeah.
You're spreading it out, huh?
Yeah. Too much, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, hey, it had to be fun while it lasted. Yeah. So tell me about the 7 points you scored. What do you remember about this?
My first 2 points was at Utah. I was cherry picking and got a dunk against Delaney Rudd. I'll never forget that. Delaney Rudd was he caught the tail end of that. I got a dunk on him. And then my other 5 points was against Phoenix, I believe. And I hit an and-one against Kenny Battle, which I'd have played against him in college. And then I hit a jump shot against somebody, Kevin Johnson or somebody. And that's the total of my points.
No three-pointers?
No, I think I was like 0 for 3 and yeah. three-pointers.
Man, if you were in your prime, the three-point line was made for you.
Oh, yeah.
God,
yeah.
You could have been.
If I wouldn't have got hurt and would have been in shape, it would have been a different story.
Yeah, like I said, you shot 54% from the college three-point line as a freshman, 45% as a sophomore. So, you know, you would have been a 40% NBA three-point shooter. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, my freshman year, the ball was more, you know, I wanted to score. You know, my freshman year, I didn't want to make no mistakes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Sophomore year, I got more – I knew the ball was coming to me a little more. So, yeah, didn't concentrate as much as I did the year before. Yeah.
Galloway, I got you. Okay. Yeah. Okay, wow. So, when you get hurt again that rookie season, I guess you finished the season on injured list in L.A.?
No, I finished it on a suspended list.
Suspended list.
I got caught on a drug test in my rookie year.
Okay. Yeah. And then you're back with them?
I got back. They put me back off the suspended list the next year, but never got into another game.
Okay.
That was Mike Shuler was coaching then.
All right.
A different coach.
Yeah.
And he didn't really, at that time, he didn't want the baggage or anything like that. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they release you in training camp? Or
No. I made it all the way through to almost to the end of the year the next year.
Okay.
But you
were suspended.
Elgin Baylor. No, I wasn't suspended then. No,
okay.
I got suspended my rookie year, and then my second year started. They put me back on the team, took me off suspension, and then I was just on IR.
Okay.
I had my surgery then. I got my surgery when I was on the suspension.
Gotcha. Okay. And you needed that surgery.
Yeah, I needed it anyway, which it helped me in the long run. You know, when I left the Clippers, I was ready to go.
Yeah. So you were healthy then.
Yeah. Yeah.
You told me or something interesting a year ago when the Clippers owner had all that issue. Why am I forgetting his name?
Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling, you texted me and wanted to get a hold of him. Because he had treated you well when you were going through all this stuff. It's interesting to hear that because of what he got in trouble for doing.
Right.
And saying.
I just think he got caught in an angry moment and saying things like, you know, me and you might say something off the wall over an angry moment. We didn't think it was getting recorded.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I know in my time being there, you know, even after my suspension and everything, he always made sure with a phone call or something like that. And he didn't have to do that, you know. So I just wanted to, you know, tell him that I wanted to thank him for, you know, that. I know he's going through a rough time.
Yeah, did you ever reach him?
No, I never got the chance to reach him. No.
Okay, yeah. But that's interesting because he certainly had a certain image from that, but you had a different experience with
him.
That he treated you well when you were out there.
Yeah.
Edwards begins a vagabond professional career, traveling the world in search of a path back to the NBA, when One-on-One continues. Welcome back to One-on-One. Mark Monteith here with former Mr. Basketball and IU All-American, Jay Edwards. When his brief career with the Clippers ended, he took off on a worldwide tour, playing in all sorts of leagues and all sorts of countries, hoping to get another shot at the NBA. It almost happened, but not quite. So, looking back, does he have any regrets? Let's let him answer that one. So, when the Clippers released you after that second season, where do you go?
I fly home, and then I start in the CBA the next year.
Okay. And now you're healthy, so you must be confident about your ability
to get back,
work your way back.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
What's your first CBA stop?
My first CBA stop was Rapid City, South Dakota.
Oh, boy.
Mount Rushmore.
We got to hear some CBA stories, because every time I talk to somebody who played in the CBA, they got crazy stories. Rapid City, South Dakota, you must think you're in no man's land there.
Yeah.
That's quite a shock.
Yeah.
From L.A. to Rapid City.
I've always been able to adapt, though, for some reason. Everywhere I'm at, I can, you know, adapt and be okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you playing well there?
Yeah, I'm playing well, but then at the same time, Fort Wayne has a team that just started that year. And I'm playing with Eric Musselman in South Dakota, and we have like an all-star team. I mean, he gets all the best players. They spend the money. So I'm sharing the rock with a lot of good players. So, and then I know Fort Wayne has a team, and I still have that in Indiana, the name right there and everything. So I get traded. I ask to get traded, and he trades me to Fort Wayne about a month into the season.
So you're in Fort Wayne. You're back in Indiana. How does it go there?
It goes good. I mean, we went a very good team because they'd already picked their team before I got there, but most of the guys were young kids. You know, the CBA, you know, a lot of them are, you know, veterans. You know, there's a lot of kids that just came out of college. So we took our lumps that year.
Now, is Damon Bailey in Fort Wayne at this time?
No. Not yet. At this time, he's probably still in college at this time.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay.
Yeah, that was probably my third or fourth year there.
Who's your coach in Fort Wayne?
Jared Oliver was coached in.
Okay.
He's a great coach. He coached under George Carl in Albany Patroons when George Carl was in the CBA. Yeah.
So you play okay in Fort Wayne?
Yeah, I play, okay. But, I at that time, I can't ever sit still. And I think I ended up getting traded. I got traded 6-7 times in the CBA in 3 years. So,
did you want to be traded? I mean, were you asking for trades?
Yeah.
Really?
I would get frustrated because playing time or this or that.
So you're winning out.
It didn't take long.
Yeah, and the CBA, if you want to trade, they'll trade you.
Trade you, yeah. That's
wow.
For sure. Yeah.
Because you just felt like you could get a better opportunity somewhere else.
Right.
And you wanted more shots, more chances
like
to show
I,
what
like
you
I was
do.
Telling you earlier about when I played for Rick Barry. Rick Barry was coaching for one. And he's trying to convince me that coming off the bench, I could get used to it because that's what I'm going to do when I get called up to the NBA. But at the same time, his son, Scooter, was the one starting. So me and him to see eye to eye of that. I didn't want to start behind Scooter Barry. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I got traded that time, too.
What were the highlights of your CBA experiences, though? I mean, weren't you all-star?
Shooting a three-point, coming in second behind Tim Legler twice. I think I should have beat him both times. But
in the three-point contest?
At
the all-star game?
Yeah.
Okay.
He ended up winning the NBA, the NBA championship. So, that made me feel as bad.
But you were on the All-Star team a couple times. You obviously
years,
were playing
once
well.
Once in Fort Wayne and once in Sioux Falls.
Okay. So how many opportunities do you get to get back into the NBA?
A couple of times I was really close. I don't know for sure, but I know Pat Riley was talking about bringing me into the Heat. I think that was the closest I got.
Okay.
And I think they end up getting his name is – he came out of Minnesota.
Rashawn Leonard?
Rashawn Leonard. They ended up getting Rashawn Leonard. It was between me and Rashawn Leonard that year.
Okay.
And they ended up getting Rashawn Leonard.
Okay, but you were on the Pacers camp or summer league team 1 year, right?
Summer league, yeah, back in 93.
93.
I think it was 93.
Who's the Pacer coach then, Bob Hill?
I believe it was Bob Hill, yeah.
Okay, and you played in summer league games for them?
No, just
the practices just before the summer league games.
Practice before the summer league.
Like a one-week deal.
Yeah, one-week deal.
How'd you play?
I thought I played pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, they didn't think I played so well.
They didn't take you to the games.
Huh? In Detroit. No, they didn't make it. Uh-huh. Mm.
Yeah. But you were telling me that Reggie Miller made a comment to you.
Yeah, he had told me that I was looking good, and he wanted me to back him up. So, it didn't work out that way, but yeah.
What was your reaction when the Pacers let you go?
Oh, I was hurt bad. I ended up going back home to Marion, and when I was getting my hair cut, I ended up fainting, actually.
Yeah.
I was so hurt by that.
Mm. So then what's next? Back to the CBA or?
Yeah. Back to the CBA for a year. And then I end up going to Spain, played over there for 6 months. I replaced somebody, Steve Hood, that had appendicitis. And I was supposed to go a month, ended up staying the rest of the year. Then after that, I ended up going to Israel for 3 years.
which was a great experience. I loved it over there. And then I went to Argentina for a year.
Okay. Yeah. Didn't you mention Venezuela once?
Oh, yeah, that was summer league. Yeah, I went to Venezuela, the Philippines, Canada. Yeah, all them were summer league places.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've seen the world.
I've been around, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you made some money.
I made some money, yeah.
Yeah. Did you manage to keep it? I mean.
No. I was still, at that time when I was playing, I was still partying and, you know, just, yeah.
So while you're in the CBA and all this process, there's still drug and alcohol issues.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you're an intelligent guy. Why do you think you had that issue? You had to know intellectually that it was good.
Yeah, of course. I think the things were just eating up at me all the time, and that's the way I medicated it. I know I wasn't supposed to be in the CBA. I know I wasn't supposed to be playing in Israel and this and that and whatever. I know where I was supposed to be, but I wasn't there. You know, and it used to eat up at me, you know, big time.
Was there like a low point in all this? You know, were you you felt like you bottomed out and then changed your path or whatever? Or,
yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of low points. I think this past year, actually, with losing both my parents, that really woke me up. You know, when you don't have nobody there for you, you know, and then you're by yourself, that'll make you wake up quick.
When did you stop playing? When did the basketball career end?
My last year of playing was Argentina. That was 2002, I believe.
And did you decide on your own that you were done with it, or did you just not have any more opportunities?
No, my knee started messing up again.
Okay.
Yeah.
You put a lot of miles on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you were playing, I guess, almost year-round, right?
Yeah, I was playing year-round just to make enough money, yeah.
Where were you living then? I mean, where was your, when you
my
weren't playing?
My base home was Fort Wayne.
In Fort Wayne?
Yeah.
Okay.
From like 92 to 2003, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. So when your playing career ends, where do you go?
Chicago.
I remember Chicago. Hearing that, and I saw you on a Big Ten Network thing. I forget what I think they were doing something on the 80s or whatever. You showed up on one of their.
It was the best season ever.
Yeah.
Big Ten, 89 season.
Yeah. So they found you.
Yeah, they found me in Mississippi, actually. They came all the way to Mississippi, yeah.
When you were in Chicago, though, what were you doing? What were you doing?
I was working for a car lot. Luxury Motors. Actually, I had a commercial here in town at that time.
Did you? Yeah, television commercial?
No, radio.
Okay.
For selling cars out in Downs Grove, Chicago. Yeah.
Really? Okay. And then you go to Mississippi?
Then I went to Mississippi.
How do you wind up there?
My cousin was running a place that made steel pipe for gas and oil. And they were putting a pipeline all the way down the Florida coast. So I ended up being a supervisor there for him, and that was a good experience.
When I first talked to you, you were working long days.
Oh, yeah. 6 days a week, 12 hours, 6 days a week, sometimes seven.
But you're a supervisor. Were you basically a laborer, or were you just
I was a laborer. Yeah. Yeah, I was a laborer.
Laying pipe.
I wasn't laying pipe. I was showing them how to do it, but yeah. We were making the pipe. We wasn't laying it, yeah.
Were you kind of happy then? I mean, everything okay?
Everything's good. That wasn't me, you know? Yeah.
But you, so from Mississippi, you come back to Indiana?
Yeah. I've been floating around since then. That was a couple years ago.
So looking back, do you wish you'd stayed in college another year?
Oh, yeah. I wish I had stayed 2 years.
Yeah? Finished up 4 years?
Finished up the whole 4 years, yeah. I mean, just imagine me and Calvert Chaney, Lawrence Funderburg. We've been hard to stop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
And with Coach Knight coaching, me and Calvert had a couple laughs about it when I was at the Michigan IU game a couple years ago.
Could have played together.
Yeah.
Of course, you would have needed that surgery, you know.
Yeah, I would have had to get the surgery. I probably shouldn't even play myself when you're anyway.
It's amazing how many careers are just, you know, directed by an injury. You know, they're ended, and it seems like so often they don't get treated in time or get treated at all.
And with my injury, a lot of people didn't know.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing about it.
Nobody said anything about it. It happened at, I don't know what part of the year the Ohio State game was. I know I had 27 the first half, for sure. I remember that. And then I remember going up against they had a 7-footer named Grady Mateen. And I was trying to get up over him. And I kind of pushed a little harder than usual, and I felt it. I knew something was wrong. It was probably minor then, and it kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. Wow, but nobody at IU could figure out what it was or do anything about it.
They knew it was a patella injury, but it's – I guess I didn't get a MRI.
Do you think they should have been more responsible about it, or, you know, sat you out, checked you out, that type of thing?
I don't know. I'm not going to say that. I was still playing at a high level. You know, I wasn't complaining about the pain that much, you know, so I'm sure they would have if the end of the year, if I wouldn't have went pro, I'm sure they would have, because they had a great, they got a great medical team there.
Yeah. When you were thinking about growing pro, did your parents weigh in? Were they thinking you should go too, or were they saying don't go?
My parents were a lot older, you know. Like I said, my brothers are 15, 16 years older than me. So, you know, being that they were a little older, you know, they didn't chime in as much, you know, as they would have probably they'd have been a little younger.
Were they like around 40 when you were born or something like that?
Yeah, my mom was 41 when I was born.
Yeah. So was mine, as a matter of fact. Okay. So when you're in college, they're in their 60s.
Yeah. They are in their 60s,
So they're not maybe as attuned to
what's going on.
Exactly. Okay. So they weren't really encouraging you either way to stay or go.
No.
By the way, that Ohio State game Edwards was talking about when he said he scored 27 points in the first half? Indeed, he did. It came on March 1st of 89 at a game in Columbus. He hit 10 of 12 shots in the first half, including 5 of 6 three-pointers, and finished the game with 34 points to lead IU to a win that clinched a tie for the Big Ten title, which it eventually won outright. That game in Columbus came after his game-winning shot had defeated Michigan the previous Sunday, and before he hit a potential game winner against Illinois the following Sunday. So it's no wonder he decided to enter the NBA draft about that time, is it? We'll continue looking back at Jay Edwards' career at IU when One-on-One continues. Back on One-on-One, I'm Mark Monteith, and I'm talking again today with former Indiana Mr. Basketball and Indiana University All-American, Jay Edwards. His time in Bloomington was full of drama, on the court and off. He was knowledgeable enough in basketball that Bob Knight would consult him on strategies. But he was so undisciplined away from basketball that he wound up in rehab more than once. And I know that after that freshman year when you lose to Richmond in the tournament, this is an Olympic year, right?
Yes.
So you, and you, didn't you have a chance to try out for that Olympic team?
Yeah. Me and Mark Macon were the only two freshmen invited to the Olympic tryout. But like I said before, I had gotten a little trouble with the marijuana that after that game in Richmond. I mean, when we played Richmond. And Coach Knight wouldn't allow me to participate in the Olympics. And I understood why.
Hmm. So he... I mean, the Olympic committee or whoever invited you, but he stepped in and said, no, you can't go.
Yeah, before my past drug test.
How do you feel about that, though? I mean, that would have been for you to be on the Olympic team?
Yeah, at the time. Now, I ain't going to lie, I was pretty pedo, but I did it to myself. I mean, if I wouldn't have, you know, broke the rules, I would have been in the camp.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did that to myself.
And that Olympic team needed shooters.
Oh, it needed shooters bad, needed bad. And then John Thompson knew about me. He had recruited me a little bit, and I think I really could have helped that team, actually. Mm. Yeah.
Do you feel at that time that, you know, you've talked about your marijuana and alcohol issues. Were you addicted, or could you have stopped any time you wanted?
I have stopped. I ain't gonna say addictive, but still, when you're taking chances like that, something's wrong. Why even take the chance? Now that I think back about it, you know, if you're gonna take a chance with your career and your school and everything else, definitely had a problem.
Why do you think you took those chances? Just because it was fun at the time, or
I was as long as I was healthy and could play basketball, I thought I could get away with
it. It was a good time,
yeah.
So where does the money come for all this beer and other stuff that you're consuming?
Basically, you know. If we wanted some beer or some food or whatever, there was a lot of ladies around that, you know, wanted to be around, and they would, you know,
purchase that for us.
Did they, like, would girls just show up at your door at your apartment?
No, it's not like that. You know, you just meet them out around campus. Yeah.
Yeah. Some things came easily there, huh?
Yeah.
I think that's the case at any major college, you know, for
athletes. Yeah, and you know, and that's another trap. You know, women, not all women, you know, some women, and you know, the party life, and you know, instead of staying focused, you need to, any kids out there listening, you got to stay focused on what you're doing.
And I think you told me once before that heading into your sophomore season, your issues with drugs and alcohol got to the point that you had to take a lie detector test.
Oh yeah, this is after my second drug test failure, which was for cocaine. But at the time, you know, you don't want to believe it yourself. So they mentioned a lie detector test. So I go into the Indiana University police station and commence to putting all the, you know, the wires on me and everything else or whatever. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to pass this thing. I believe the only thing I passed was my name that day.
You got that one right.
Yeah,
the needles didn't bounce on
that. Yeah, everything else was wrong. So, yeah.
You were so cool under pressure, I'm surprised you didn't pass that test, shit. You know, one way or the other.
I didn't pass that one, no.
And, you know, we've talked about your game-winning shots. Did you ever have a game-winning shot that you missed in a game at IU?
Yeah, thinking back, I believe Purdue my freshman year. I think I could have tied it or cut the lead a little bit or whatever, but I missed that one. Try not to remember those, Mark. But I think there was a couple shots in my career, maybe not just at IU, but a couple times that I've shot and not made it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you the kind of player who, when you went on the road in the Big Ten playing for IU and, you know, the fans are going crazy, student sections are yelling at you and everything, did you kind of embrace that and love it?
I can tell you a funny story about Notre Dame. We were at Notre Dame, and they were giving it to me pretty good, but to just say no's and that kind of thing. So, I'd tell them to get a little louder. Yeah.
How'd you play?
I should free. We won. I played decent. Yeah.
What's decent that you remember?
I think I had 20-something.
Okay.
I feel like I could have got 30-something. I wanted to, but
Did you ever have – I mean, Coach Knight was famous for his motion offense and moving the ball and, you know, feeding the post and playing the quote-unquote right way and everything. Did you two have many conflicts over your shot selection and how often you should shoot, that kind of thing?
No, not at all. I mean, from the beginning, when I got in there and started playing – he knew I was a smart player, and I wasn't going to do nothing to, you know, to hurt the team.
Yeah, you didn't force shots.
Not very often.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, you're 6'4", you're athletic, but you're not, you know, Michael Jordan or whatever. So what allowed you to be a great scorer and, you know, get off your shot and everything like that?
I think I got a good change of pace. I can go slow, but I can even go slower. Yeah. And then I can pick it up. Like a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have a outstanding fastball, but he can change the pace a little bit. I think I was good at changing the pace.
A lot of players don't realize that you don't necessarily have to be quick. You just have to have the knack.
The knack to get around somebody.
Yeah.
And then when you get around, you know what to do.
I can remember seeing him. I mean, Chris Mullin used to get to the basket. He was as slow as anybody, but he just had the knack for getting to the basket. And Jamal Tinsley wasn't quick, but he had change of pace. So you could do that.
Yeah.
And is it true that Coach Knight used to kind of consult you about how to approach an opponent and, you know, who to play and that kind of thing?
Yeah, when my sophomore year rolled around, he would call me in to the coach's lounge and ask me certain things about how I felt about this offense, if I'm getting open, or who to start, you know, as far as our personnel on the team, which really, you know, I knew he didn't do that very often to certain players, you know. It had to be the player, usually a captain.
Yeah,
when he does it too, but he did call me in there and consult with me a lot.
So he respected your opinion in that regard. Yeah. You know, you're talking about, you know, we've talked about your drug alcohol issues and how it started in high school. You know, can you trace your willingness to go that direction to anything? I mean, like, you know, your parents divorced. Did that have some kind of impact? That kind of thing.
I don't know. I just I wouldn't say that. They say it's it might be hereditary a little bit. My dad was an alcoholic.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, so that, you know, that probably has a little
bit. Alcoholism is in many ways a disease. It's, you know, some people deal with it and some don't. So it is something you can inherit. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, I've talked to race drivers like Rick Mears and Allinger Jr. who have battled alcoholism. Donnie Walsh, you know, isn't ashamed to say he went through an alcoholism period. So that is kind of a condition that you can inherit that can be tough to deal with.
Yeah, that's like that. Like I was saying, that's like kind of my, the alcohol is my gateway, you know, after I drink, then that my mindset changes and I might do other things at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you now? Are you completely free from it or are you able to have a drink now?
No, I can have a beer. I can have a beer. I ain't going to lie to you. I have a beer or two every once in a while, but I'm far from that man that left IU when I was 19. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At what point did you kind of cut that off? You know, when were you finally able to get over all that?
When I, you know, quit beating myself up. You know, I like to beat myself up, or I didn't, you know, and then when I quit doing that, that helped a lot.
What do you mean by that? I mean, what were you going through after you stopped playing, you know, as far as what your self-image or whatever?
Well, when I was playing, you know, I didn't really, you know, you don't really listen to the things people were saying about you and this and that. When you're done playing, that's when they really pick up the, you know, the hatred on you. And I got depressed. I ain't gonna lie, I was depressed. And it took me about 10 years, really, to really come out of, you know, feeling sorry for myself and why I should be here. I seeing people on TV that I played against, they're in the NBA doing well, and I'm not. So, you know, I had to get that out of my head and go on with life.
Yeah, you're ready to go now, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah,
like.
It sounds good, yeah.
you talked about that six-day rehab stint here in Indianapolis when you were at IU. Have you gone through any other rehabilitation or counseling programs, that kind of thing for it?
No, when I was in the NBA, I went through John Lucas. Okay. Went to John Lucas, and I, you know.
Spent time with him.
Yeah, yeah.
How long were you with him?
8 months.
Oh, okay. And when was that? Was that between your seasons with the Clippers, or when?
Yeah, but at the same time, yeah.
Okay, while you're still in L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that like, were you in Houston with him?
I was in Houston, yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Was that good? Did that help
you? Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I was there with some other NBA players I won't mention, but yeah. It was a good time being around your peers and they're the ones that are having the same problems you have.
He's helped a lot of guys.
Yeah, he helped.
He's had a good program.
Yeah,
no question. Interesting. When you finished with him, did you feel like you had taken a step?
Oh, exactly.
Okay, but when you were done with him, was that while you were still with the Clippers, basically, or you?
When I got done with him, I was with him for a little while, but then they released me that year. I asked to be released because they wouldn't take me off IR.
Yeah, they wouldn't even give you a chance.
Yeah, Elgin Baylor was the general manager at the time, and he tried to convince me to stay to the next training camp, but I was healthy and I was ready to play.
So do you wish now you had stayed and come back that following fall?
Probably so. Yeah, probably so. Instead of forcing the issue,
like you say, you had a knack for forcing the issue, didn't you? I wanted to move on. Come on, let's
moving,
go.
I keep moving. Yeah,
yeah. And you know, give me a chance to do something here. Let's
go.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. So now you've learned patience.
Yep.
You've had no choice.
Life will teach you a lesson. Yeah. That's for sure.
Edwards gets to work on putting the past behind him and living in the present tense. The future tense, too, when One-on-One continues. Back on One-on-One, Mark Monteith here with Indiana's own Jay Edwards. It took him a long time to get over the disappointment of his professional basketball career. More than 10 years, in fact. But he's getting back on track now, taking online classes to get his degree and planning to get together with some other former Mr. Basketballs to start instructional camps. Do you still play pickup games? Do you still play? Do you still get out and shoot?
Oh, yeah. We play around. Some, you know, they still got summer league tournaments around in Anderson and Muncie, the 35 and overs that I try to get in there and play a couple minutes in.
You still feel like you can play?
I can still shoot it for sure. But as far as running up down the court, no, I don't know.
You're not into
about
that too much.
Yeah, I can shoot with anybody still. Yeah,
I can believe that. Yeah. I can believe it. Now, you've got a son, right?
Yeah.
And he played high school ball around here, right?
He played in Marion.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And where's he now?
He's in Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah.
Did he play beyond high school?
He bounced around a couple colleges, you know. He was something like his dad in that point where, you know, he grew up a little faster than I did, though. He's turned around. You know, he had a little trouble in college, but he's turned around now. He just turned 26 on the 8th, and he's doing very good. Actually, he's working out. He's maybe be going overseas for the second semester.
Okay, to play, to continue playing.
Yeah.
How tall is he?
6'5".
Does he shoot kind of like you do? I mean, does the form remind people of you?
Yeah, yeah. He tries. He really works at it hard. He's more athletic than I was.
Really?
Yeah.
What, I mean, quicker or?
Quicker, jumps higher.
Really? Did you work a lot with him individually, you know?
I wasn't around. You know, I was still playing at the time. I was gone a lot, but I did work with him a lot, yeah.
Okay. Did you consider yourself a great athlete, like in college or pros, that type of thing?
I wouldn't say great athlete, no. Yeah. I was above average athlete. You know, in high school, I think I had 65 dunks my senior year. So,
yeah.
I mean, I could definitely dunk it. And,
oh, yeah, you're 6'4".
Yeah.
And you're quick. You certainly had the knack for getting your shot off.
Yeah, I could get my shot off, yeah. But I wouldn't say a great athlete, no.
You know, you're in Marion a lot now. How is it for you there? You know, people remember you, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Is it comfortable back in Marion? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's okay, you know. A lot of ghosts from my past, you know, maybe come and run up on me when I'm in Marion. But I still got a lot of good friends there. There's a radio guy there named Jim Brunner that I love. He gave me my nickname Silk.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
okay.
He's the one that gave me my nickname. So yeah. There's still some people there that support me. Yeah.
Okay, are you still in touch with many people from IU?
Yeah, there's a couple people. As far as like players.
Yeah.
Lennon Jones, of course.
Yeah.
You know, Jamal Meeks. I still talk to him a lot. Mark Robinson, every once in a while. Yeah, and anybody I run into, like at the games or anything, I still talk to them. Steve Isle, Joe Hillman,
mm-hmm.
I still talk to them. I seen Jeff Oliphant at Indiana Wesleyan. His son was playing a tournament game there the other day, and I seen him. That was nice.
If you had not had the injury with the Clippers and everything had gone smoothly, what kind of NBA player do you think you could have been? What was your potential, your ceiling as an NBA player?
What I do, I try to compare the players that I played with, you know, something like I played with Larry Johnson, I played with Dennis Scott. These are the people that came out in my McDonald's team, you know. So, I mean, I seen what these guys did. I mean, they didn't have over great careers, but they had good careers, you know. So I think I could have been a good NBA player.
At 6'4", you're tall enough to be a shooting guard in the NBA, but then you got guys like Reggie Miller at 6'7", so you might have had a slight disadvantage,
right.
But it seems like you were at least athletic enough and tall enough to have a career, you know.
Oh yeah, I think I've been pretty solid. I'm pretty sure I would have been. Like take Bruce Bowen for instance. He was in Fort Wayne, Cherry with me, and he started, and I ended up taking his spot. And the next thing you know, he's winning rings. So
Was it hard for you? At some point when you're in the CBA to watch NBA games and be thinking I could be there.
Oh, that's what was eating me up. That's what half the things that was eating me up with. Okay. I know I should have been there, and you know, and instead of getting serious and, you know, getting everything together, I would medicate more.
Mm. Give me some war stories from the CBA. You know, a guy, Troy Lewis, told me the story of a guy getting traded for a sweatsuit one time. I mean,
travel CBA stories. Was so cutthroat. I learned from some CBA veterans, though. The main thing you got to do in the CBA is get your shot attempts. That's all that counts. As long as I got my attempts, I didn't care about the stats. Yeah, so.
Got to get your shots up.
You got to get it because everybody's about for their self in the CBA.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it is now where you had NBA contracts. Now, it would have been different. But now there was this, you know, every man for himself.
Yeah, the Development League is much better, really, than the CBA was, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's much more professional now.
A lot more professional.
It was tough being a big man in the CBA because you never get the ball.
You wouldn't get the ball. Yeah, there's no.
How did you prove yourself?
Uh-uh.
What was your high point game in the CBA?
I scored 45, I think, one game.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the same game, George Gervin brother had 43. We played on the same team.
You two combined for 88?
And got beat.
What's it like I mean, when you were in high school, you were as big as a high school athlete can be in the state of Indiana. Then, of course, at IU, you're an All-American. You're the big man on campus, and then you're playing pro ball here and there. What was the adjustment like to the so-called real world when you're not playing ball anymore? Was that difficult?
Oh, yes. Yeah, my last playing time was in Israel. That was 2002, I believe. I finished out there. And then when it was time to, you know, stop playing and, you know, the contracts were up, it is difficult. It's difficult. You don't know what to do, what you're going to do, unless you plan ahead, which I didn't do. So, I mean, then you get into things, you know, feeling sorry for yourself and such things like that. And, yeah, it's difficult. You really need, you know, somebody to help, you know, guide you in the right direction.
When you go out today, are you recognized a lot?
Here in Indianapolis, when I come down to Indianapolis, you know, people more of my age, 35 and up, they will come to me and ask me questions, you know, this and that, about shots or this or Coach Knight or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure people bring up those game-winning shots all the time to you probably. I was watching that Michigan game, you know, this
guy. Exactly. They'd tell me exactly where they were and everything else.
Yeah. Do you like being recognized or would you rather just kind of lay low?
No, it's not bad now. I mean, it was kind of overwhelming when I was younger. Like, you know, when I went to public, like a mall or something like that, you know, it's, you know, you can't do what you want to do as far as, you know, because people are coming up to you. But nowadays, oh, I love it. You know, I'll talk to any fan that comes up to me.
Didn't you tell me that Mike Epps saw you out one night? And
oh, yeah, I ran to Mike Epps and Andrew Luck same night. That was a good night for me. It's my birthday last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but Mike, I think, was all about, hey, Jay Edwards, right?
Oh, yeah, he remembered me from Channel 4, WTTV. Yeah. He made a joke about that, yeah. Okay.
How often do you get back to Bloomington? How many games have you gone to at IU since you left there as a player?
I probably went to a handful, maybe six or seven, probably. Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable going back there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody's really nice. I mean, you know, for a while I didn't when Coach Knight was still there, but even when Samson was there and even before that when Mike Davis was there, if I got to a game with Lyndon or something, everybody treated me well.
I'm sure people are wondering, what's Lyndon doing now?
Lyndon is doing well. He works for a company here in Indianapolis. He works in the HR department, and he's doing very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
You say you want to coach. At what level? You know, what would you like to do as a coach?
I'm just worried about, you know, at this time, one step at a time, I'm gonna finish this degree. And hopefully, you know, some chances or opportunities will come to me when they find out I finished my degree and everything. But I wouldn't mind high school, starting in high school.
Be a high school coach.
Yeah.
Okay. And how much more do you need for your degree?
I probably got about a year and a half to go.
Okay.
I'm on like 54 credit hours right now.
And are you working right now? Or, I mean, is there...
Am I working work?
Yeah, right now.
No, I'm unemployed right there.
Okay.
Looking for something.
Okay. And how did you get hooked up with Grand Canyon State as far as online courses?
Grand Canyon University?
Yeah, of all places.
My son, like I said, my son is out there in Phoenix.
Okay.
And he was thinking about, because he didn't finish his degree yet. So he was thinking about, you know, while he was thinking about and telling me these places, I, you know, got online and put something in. They called me. Mm-hmm. And they were nice. And it's a Christian school and very nice. And they've helped me all along the way. And I'd never heard of the place before. And it was him being out there in Phoenix. That's where it's located. Dan Marley is the basketball coach.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't know none of this when I signed up.
That had to be weird for you when they just played at IU recently.
That's when I knew I was in the right place. I mean, that had to be God. You know, I'm just telling me, you know, I mean, what's the odds of that? You know, I signed up for this school before this basketball season even started. And then they end up playing IU this year.
Talking about wanting to teach and coach, you plan to get some camps going, right? Shooting camps or instructional camps?
I got two other guys, two Mr. Basketballs. It's going to be Woody Austin, Lennon Jones, and I. We're going to get together and run some two-day clinics around Indiana this year.
And what, shooting camps or just overall skill camps?
It's going to be, I believe it's going to be overall skill camps. There will be shooting involved in there, of course. It's just coming together now, but hopefully by the spring, sometimes we'll get started.
Okay, so can you teach a guy to hit a game-winning jumper with a hand in his face?
Of course.
But like you said, nobody taught you how to shoot, though, right, really?
No, I never went to a school or a camp for shooting. I believe most great shooters, it comes naturally.
Like if you're working with a kid, somebody brings their kid to you, you know, help my kid shoot, what kind of things would you be working with them on?
First of all, probably the balance, his balance, and if he's squaring up. and seeing the rim. I mean, a lot of kids, they fade both ways or fade back. And that's, you know, that's when you see the balls going off the left and right.
You know, I'm amazed by the number of guys I see in the NBA who don't go straight up. I mean, they're fading one way or the other. They're falling backwards, even on free throws sometimes. Yeah, I'm amazed by that. So if you just going straight up or leaning in a little bit.
It's amazing. If you can just get the basics of the game, it's a lot simpler as the older you get.
Yeah, sure. I would imagine you could be a shooting instructor.
Oh, yeah.
Although, I don't know, maybe it came so easily to you that.
No, yeah.
Just do what I do.
I had to work at it.
I know that.
I got to square up like anybody else.
I got a theme question that I've asked everybody uh-huh. that I've talked to for this show. When you're sleeping at night, do you have dreams about playing basketball?
Yeah, my dreams are mostly pretty bad. I hate to say that, but it's always that I'm late for the game or I'm still at IU. And I'm late. I got to go in there and look at Bobby Knight because I'm late to the game.
Yeah. I've heard people say that.
A lot of my dreams are like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You're running late.
Still running late. Yeah.
Do you have dreams when you're though actually playing in a game?
No, I'm always running late.
You're just running late, trying to get there. Late,
trying to get to that damn game. Yeah.
One-on-one with Jay Edwards continues in a moment. All right. I hope you enjoyed these conversations with Jay Edwards. You know, his story was certainly too involved to be told in one episode. Hopefully, there'll be justification someday for a third episode. As you heard, he's had a difficult time trying to establish himself since retiring from basketball, but he finally appears to be on the right path. Just like in his dreams, he's running late, but he's taking online classes and planning to participate in some instructional camps this summer. Hey, if you get a chance, check him out. Maybe he can teach your kid how to hit a three-pointer. To win a game, at the buzzer, with a hand in his face, and on national television. As you heard, Edwards takes responsibility for how things have gone to this point in his life, but it seems to me that this is the classic cautionary tale about the trappings of too much fame too soon. People in Marion gave him and his high school teammates just about anything they wanted while they were winning those state championships, and then people in Bloomington enabled him even more during his 2 years at IU. A lot of kids would have had their focus diverted in the wrong directions while surrounded by those kind of influences. Looking back, someone would have done Edwards a huge favor in high school if they had been willing to sacrifice wins for more discipline. And Bob Knight would have been wise to get him off the court, either by leaving him in rehab longer or even redshirting him to make sure he got his priorities in order. Add a family history of alcoholism, and it all made for a combustible mix for Jay Edwards. Now, if you want to hear this conversation again, or part one of it, or some of the other recent one-on-one episodes, you can find them on the website at 1070thefan.com. Click on audio, click on one-on-one, and the podcast will be there. I can be reached by email at mark@1070thefan.com, and I'm available on Facebook and Twitter, too, with that Twitter handle being at Mark Monteith. Join me again next week with another spine-tingling conversation with an Indiana sports personality. Right here on FM 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.